League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
I'm Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are Paranormal Chicks.
Episode 383. Okay, real quick, before we do anything, we have to talk about Patreoners, because I feel like it's been a minute. So.
What did you say?
Because I feel like it's been a minute.
Oh, okay.
Thank you so much, Trisha W. from Virginia.
Kathy W. from California.
Danica P. from who knows where.
Is that Danica Patrick?
Maybe.
Vroom, vroom. Okay. Also, Ace St. Clair, Oklahoma.
And Regina, unknown last name and unknown location.
We need your deets, but shout out to you because you did an annual subscription.
Yeah, did y'all know you can do that? If you're like, oh, I want to do this, but I don't want to pay monthly, you can actually pay for the whole year. And I think it's like a discounted rate.
Yeah, well, I'm so glad that you're knowledgeable about it.
But yes. I don't know how much. So I'm just like, I think it is, but like, I don't really know how much.
Also, Kathy W., she knows what's up because she was on the Am I the Asshole Live that we had.
So if you want to get in on all this good that all these people are getting in on, like an extra episode a freaking week, and one of those is a Facebook Live where we do an Am I the Asshole, and you can get in and chat with us and watch us do shit goes down on Am I the Asshole. But if you went on in on this, you got to head over to patreon.com/theAPC podcast. Also, by the time this comes out, we will be leaving in 4 days for New Orleans. And we're going to have fun, and we're going to sweat our balls off, and we're going to have fun, and we're going to sweat.
Yeah, sweat. Sweat, 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 sweat. You remember that story? It was about the...
He sweat?
God damn.
Who is that?
Oh my God, that's so you.
All right, who is it, though?
He's a singer.
Oh, okay.
But, like, more of, like, R&B rapper.
Okay.
You know, like, you listen to Keith Sweat, you're going to get it on.
You're going to sweat?
Mm-hmm. Where was I going with this? You know that episode that I did? I think it was about the Japanese...
Elevator?
No, stop guessing. You're stairs. Ruining my thing. I can't think when you're trying to think. All right, the Japanese tsunami, and there is that lady who would come in and she would leave a puddle, like she would sit in with the family and she would leave a puddle. You don't know the story? Okay.
Yes, well, yes.
And we were like, oh, that would be us, but for the wrong reasons. That's literally going to be me. You're going to be like, oh, okay. So I know exactly what dimples are in your butt, everything, like you have a long crack.
That took you so long to tell.
This is my life, y'all. But if you want to sweat and you want to do all the things, come on down. You've got 4 days. It's free for the live show and also bingo and some other games and all of that. That's free. That's at the hotel that we're staying at. But we're also going to the Museum of Death and a walking tour. And it's like, it's paranormal, but it's also highlights the true crime aspect of it.
I know. I'm super excited about that because I've only ever done one walking tour. There wasn't a lot, but it was still cool. Like, there were no encounters.
Yeah.
But it was still really fun. Okay. So there was something I wanted to talk about.
Well, while she's looking for whatever she wants to talk about, let me tell you a story that happened today. I'm getting comfortable at work. All right. They're seeing me crazy, but... one of my coworkers, shout out if you're listening, Tim, but he had said...
Timmy Two Shoes!
Yes, Timmy Two Shoes! Okay, so he had called his cube partners, like his cube mates, numbnuts, And I said, how do you know they're numb? And he said, HR, like just joking. And I said, no, you're the one who said it. I'm just wondering, how do you know? But I was like, damn, never even thought about that. Why is it called numb nuts?
I don't know. Okay, on to something serious. So y'all know all the internet is a buzz in the paranormal community right now about Dan Rivera.
Oh, the Annabelle?
Yes. So if you don't know, Dan Rivera doing the things with Annabelle and like suddenly passed away on July 13th. So everybody's like, oh my God, like it's so sensational. Everybody's posting all the things. So I follow Lock Haven Paranormal Seekers on Facebook and they posted something and I was like, oh my God, like this is so true. They say, you know, their hearts go out to everyone, like loved ones of him who passed away tragically. And they're like, please basically stop associating his tragic death with Annabelle, because they say this doll was widely publicized by Lorraine Warren, who was often said to be a fraud. Warren was said to have fabricated many of her allegedly haunted sightings and accused of exploiting the mentally ill for her own gain. Warren and her husband promoted the Annabelle doll as possessed, but there was actually no evidence of this. All the headlines suggesting that Rivera died just after giving a tour of the Annabelle doll are using his death for dramatic purposes. And it says, like, he gave the tours often. There's no big mystery to this sad event. Like, please be considerate of his family.
Well, I get that. But also, the same way how I feel like Slenderman could be, like, a tulpa.
Yeah.
Everyone puts that on Annabelle. Like, if someone was like, hey, here's Annabelle, hold her. I'd be the fuck, no, I'm not.
For sure.
Like, I don't even want to look at her, you know? Like, uh-uh. But also, you know, when Annabelle was touring New Orleans, all the, like, those convicts escaped and...
The house burned.
Like, the oldest, like, house in Louisiana burned or whatever. So, I'm just saying, it's just one of those things. But I get it. Like, it shouldn't... His death is tragic and it shouldn't be entertainment.
But then I also see the flip side of it. It's like, well, he also, his literal career was touring with this doll, like, not just this doll, obviously, but yeah, paranormal things.
But he is doing some, it's like Devil on the Move or something like that. And it is like focusing on Annabelle going to these different places.
Right. So I don't know. I just was like, oh, I didn't think about it like that.
Also, why would someone want Annabelle to be like a flop Stanley?
Okay, it's flat Stanley. Oh. But your joke was a flop, but Stanley's flat.
Oh, so close. You can tell I don't have kids. Carrie just had like a 5-minute giggle fest over my thing. Now, all the jokes I tell, she don't laugh at shit. But then you make one little mistake.
Oh my God, that was so funny. But what's not funny is the man died. But I don't know. I thought that was like a cool, different perspective. But on the flip side, I see like, well, your whole career was promoting it. So, of course, it's going to get, your death is going to get wrapped up in it, you know? Y'all let us know what y'all think.
Yeah.
Who's the asshole? Are we the asshole?
I don't feel like we're the asshole here. Well, we haven't really discussed this, but Aaron from, I'm going to say Paranormal Chicks. He's not, but he could be if he wanted to. But Aaron from Ghost Adventures, you know, he had his wife, now ex-wife, put a hit out on him.
Yes.
Okay. So if you don't know that, go somewhere else because I'm not giving you all the deets because this is...
Go somewhere else. Like, maybe like Google it. Go somewhere else. No, please don't. Stay.
So if you don't know the whole thing, it's like he found love in a hopeless place. Then his wife was like, oh, everything's perfect. But secretly, she was having an affair. Okay. Ooh. And I want to say he found out about the affair and she's like, no, I want you. And he's like, okay, cool. Like, let's work on it. Let's do all the things. But then she really didn't want to work on it. And she found a little pen pal. And the pen pal was in jail. And Carrie actually covered that guy. I don't know if you'll remember him, but I always am just like, oh, this piece of shit. Because he was addicted to cam girls. And he, like, refused to really work and do all the things. everyone in the family, they were rich. But like he used all of their money and stuff to pay for cam girls. And like they went to the cam girl and was like, can you cut him off? Like, I know you're doing your thing, but like, don't take money from him, please. Like, he's taking our money. He's stealing everything from us. Then he killed all his family because they like didn't want him to, you know, steal their money and all of that. And of course, I don't even know how. I think she watched a documentary, saw him, and was like, he would know what to do. And so they were talking and they were flirting. And then he was like, I know how to get rid of your problem. And then you can marry me and all the things. And luckily, it didn't come to fruition. But I just thought that was so odd that paranormal meets true crime. And you've covered that guy that just so randomly she picked to be her pen pal and like,
yeah,
thing. And I'm like, why him? You would think it would be someone who was like a mobster or something that had connections, not this guy that went rogue and killed his whole fucking family.
Yeah.
But it is very sad to see Aaron. Like he's always just been such a genuine person and like always wears his heart on his sleeve, I feel like. And he's kind of like the joke of Ghost Adventures just because, oh, it's a scary place. We're going to put Aaron there.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. And just to see him living just a nightmare. I don't know. It's sad.
Wow. We are some Debbie Downers this episode.
Well, before we do that, we're just going to keep on going with the theme of death and talk about life insurance.
Because this episode is sponsored by SelectQuote.
And life insurance shows up a lot more in true crime than you think.
Like, a lot.
Over 600 murders a year in the U.S. are tied with life insurance as the motive.
And every time we read a case like that, it's like, well, those people really planned ahead. And I don't mean the murderer. I mean the people that had the life insurance.
Yes.
That's why we want to talk to you about SelectQuote, because this is how you do life insurance right. It's not shady, it's not sketchy, and it's definitely not complicated.
Well, and the goal is to protect your loved ones, not give them a reason to bump you off.
SelectQuote has been around for nearly 40 years and have helped over 2 million people find more than $700 billion in coverage. Billion.
And with all of that, those large numbers, I can't even count on my fingers and toes. SelectQuote isn't the same overpriced, one-size-fits-all plan. It's all about helping you find the right policy for your life, your budget, and your situation.
Absolutely, because I don't need $700 billion worth of coverage, but, I mean, I could use a little, pay off my house. Pay off whatever in case something happens, especially if you're the breadwinner of your family. You want to make sure that your family is taken care of in the event something happens to you.
And with SelectQuote, it doesn't have to be this long, annoying thing. It takes about 15 minutes and a licensed agent will walk you through it. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy.
Like Donna on the weekends. And the price? Shockingly affordable. Some policies are less than a dollar a day. I mean, that's less than I spend on snacks at the vending machine.
And if you're in good health, some carriers can even get you same-day coverage with no medical exam.
That's faster than Donna's Amazon packages.
Oh, for sure.
So what you have to do is head to selectquote.com/creep. You're going to talk with a licensed agent who will help you find a policy that makes sense for your life.
Again, that is selectquote.com/creep.
You don't want to leave this stuff to chance. Whether you're single, married, have kids, or fur babies, this is how you make sure your people are protected. So get the right life insurance for you for less at selectquote.com/creep.
SelectQuote. They shop, you save. Before recording, me and Carrie and Colby were eating dinner and she was talking about this post about work-life balance and what countries have the best. And New Zealand was the first one, came in number one. And I feel like this is the worst segue ever, but if you're talking about New Zealand, you're very close to Australia, and that's where we're going to be today.
We're just going to go with Donna's brain. She's had a long week.
But picture it. We're in Victoria, Australia.
Just smile and nod, y'all. That was the best segue y'all have ever heard. Fucking Paul Blart Mall Cart. God damn it. Fucking Paul Blart Mall Cop over here is just killing it with the segues.
That's how my brain works. Okay. So again, picture it. Victoria, Australia, August 1993. Now, it's in Victoria, but it's a rural town, really remote, that's tucked away. And it's called Antwerp.
Look what you did, you little twerp.
And when I say rural, I mean it's only like 63 residents. And now maybe only 62. And we're talking about one of those residents, Joan Vollmer. She was 49 years old at the time of this story and was married to Ralph Vollmer, who was 55. Now, we don't know a whole lot about Joan's childhood and past, but there was some alleged sexual abuse she suffered when she was a child, and then her first husband died by suicide.
Hmm.
So Joan had been in and out of different psychiatric wards where she was diagnosed with anxiety, depression, and schizophrenia. And those were all where she voluntarily went into treatment, got on medicine, started leveling out. And at this point in her life, Joan was in a great place with her hubby of 25 years, Ralph, who I mentioned, and everyone said that she seemed to be happier than she ever had been.
She had to be in such a dark, deep place to, like, seek that treatment out. Because I feel like when you're in such, I don't know, like, props to her, because when you're in the thick of it like that, sometimes it's hard to see your way out and to be like, no, I need help.
Yeah. Now, they were both religious people, but Ralph was definitely more religious than Joan. And the whole time I'm doing this story, all I keep thinking is Joan Osborne's song, What If God Was One of Us? I was like, huh, I wonder if she liked that song. Anyway, also how my brain works. So back to them being religious, when Joan got out of the hospital and stuff and she was feeling better, Ralph was like, yeah, because that's God working, because, like, I've prayed for you to get better, and, you know, like, now we're in this great place, and everything's going great for us, and it's all thanks to God. Meanwhile, like, now there's medication, you know, and I'm not saying it's not both or neither or whatever, but it's just, like, he does not see the medication doing anything. You know, he's like, no, it's because I prayed. Now, Ralph was a pig farmer, and they were well known in their small community, because I feel like if you're in a community of 63 people and it's a rural place, a pig farmer is a big deal. And side tangent, that dang serial killer, I think his name was Pickman or something.
Mm-hmm. Robert Picton?
Picton, yeah. He was a pig farmer, and he has tainted that for all pig farmers. When I hear that, I go, oh. I know why you a pig farmer. Like, it's not fair, but he has ruined them. Now, Ralph was, like, you know, living on the farm, doing his daily chores. So he and some of the members of church kind of went to, like, a VBS revival type thing. And Joan was like, cool, I'll stay here. You go do your thing, boo. You know, like, you go do your thing and I got you. Now, in that time that he was gone, and it's like 2 weeks, people started noticing that she seemed to be more erratic. Now, it said that she stopped taking the medication that she was prescribed, but no one, like, said, yes, she did stop taking it. But it's kind of like, I feel like that's what happened, but who knows? All they knew was Joan was acting weird, and not like in a scary way. It would just be like, what is she doing? She would be found dancing outside the house in the middle of the day. Not just like, oh, having fun, like, in her moment. They would be like, She was kind of gyrating.
Oh, Lord. Who was she, Elvis?
And then Joan started to talk differently. She started to use language that shocked her neighbors. You know, like shit, fuck, all the things. And then she started to not even form words. She started to mimic animals. She would start barking like a dog, grunting like a pig. And when Ralph got home, he saw this and he didn't see it as a mental health crisis. He saw it as demonic because he had left. And while he was away, that's when Satan came to play. Something to note about Ralph is that where he is religious, he was kind of in a fringe religious group because him and a handful of others, you know, that made up this group, they had been let go of the Lutheran church earlier for being kind of extremist in their views. And where, like, the Lutheran church didn't highlight people speaking in tongues or casting out spirits, or they didn't really talk about battling demons. That's what Ralph and his, like, brethren felt like they were doing. Like, they're checking yes to all of that, and the church is going, no, no, no. So when Ralph sees this, he's like, you know, the devil had to get me how he could get me, and that's how he's going to get me. He's coming through my wife. So Ralph was convinced that Joan wasn't just acting strangely. She was possessed, and she was being controlled by darkness. But the thing is, he didn't just keep this to himself. He told his neighbors, like he confided in the friends from the former church group, and he told them that Joan was acting like a sex worker because, you know, she was gyrating, she was cussing, she was being more vocal than normal. And he said that she had been manipulated by forces beyond her control.
Because heaven forbid a woman have a fucking opinion.
Right? Ralph thought, okay, I'm going to tell people, but like, I can do this. I am powerful. I just went and got like supercharged on my faith. I'm good. And he tried to restrain her himself. He tied her to their bed and he then locked her in the basement. But Joan would like thrash and scream and like cry out for help. And Ralph was like, well, fuck. Well, he didn't say that. You know, he said, well, golly.
I was going to say, well, darn tootin'.
Yeah, he, you know.
Oh, golly gee willikers. You've never heard that?
No, I have, but I was trying to think, what would Australian people say? Not that.
Well, I really can't do an Australian accent, so I'm not even going to try.
They'd say, well, this is not a good day.
Okay. Moving on.
Mm-hmm. But he said whatever they say. He reached out to others for help. But he didn't call her doctor or any mental health professional. He called upon the members of his spiritual circle. Now, remember, they had made their own church together. You know, it wasn't part of the Lutheran church at all. He invited over his neighbor and fellow spiritual guide, John Reichenbach, and his wife, Leanne. Now, I found his age. He was like 31, so I'm guessing Leanne was about the same. So they were young, considering Joan was in her late 40s and Ralph was in his mid-50s.
Not necessarily. In some religions, people marry young people.
Oh, true, 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 true. I was like, no, I'm just saying it's kind of odd to me that they went to like a younger couple when they're both older, just because if he's like so fringe and like extreme with his religion, you would think he would seek like the advice of elders.
No, he wouldn't, because he wanted to do what he wanted to do. And he basically wanted them there to just give that permission. He didn't actually care about their input.
I think so, too. But what he didn't expect was them to be like, okay, but we're going to call over Leah Glugston, too. And she was a 78-year-old, like, spiritual leader. Again, she was expelled from the church, and she was very intense with her beliefs. She had self-proclaimed spiritual gifts. And with their powers combined, like Captain Planet, they decided that Joan wasn't just battling one demon. This is why she was acting so erratic. She had 10 evil spirits living inside of her. And they had no other choice but to drive them out with an exorcism.
Because that's exactly what someone with a mental illness needs. A group of narcissists making decisions for them based on a religion that they made up.
Right. And this is what's sad. Well, everything about this is sad. But she wasn't even acting that weird. You know, in other exorcisms that we've talked about, it's been like a longer progression. And they're like, I don't know what to do. They kind of like are at their wits' end. It's like he came back and he was like possessed. Like, I know it already, you know? I don't know. She didn't even have time to, like, what if she was just going through a bad fucking week, you know?
He didn't care.
Mm-mm. And with this exorcism, it wasn't just like a one-hour ritual. It wasn't someone just laying hands on her and whispering prayers. This was very prolonged. It lasted 4 days and was very violent. So Joan was tied to a chair with her own stockings, and she was denied food and water. Like, she never got that because they said that they would not feed the demons inside of her.
For 4 days.
Mm-hmm. And even though we feel like we have it hot over here, it's still hot over there. And where they live, it's just like a lot of plains. So it's in the summer. It's in August. And Joan just pleaded for a drink. Anything she could do, you know, she would do. She just needed a drink of water. But the group was like, nope. Every time she cries is like showing that the demons are holding on, but we're winning. And so they kept going.
Like, I don't understand that about exorcisms is like, why do you starve the person? Because how is the person, like the human, supposed to fight off a demon if you're withholding their basic needs, food, water, all the things? Like, how are they supposed to have the strength to fight this demon if you don't fucking feed them?
That's such a good point.
Thanks.
Like, I've never even thought about that because I've just been like, that's stupid that you don't give them like sustenance. But like, when you're sick, it's like starve a fever,
feed a cold.
Yeah, but it's like, you need something. And why would a demon need food and water to work? You know what I mean?
Because it doesn't.
Man, Carrie makes me think sometimes.
Maybe makes you wish you had different friends sometimes, but sometimes I make you think.
Mm-hmm. More the first thing, but yes. So Ralph started like telling more people about what was going on with Joan, and he said at this point, he really didn't even see Joan as his wife. Like, so when this was happening to her, he kind of disassociated and he was just seeing her as a, quote, evil spirit that needed to be dealt with.
How convenient for him.
Right. But like, how can you separate the woman who you've been with for 25 years from, you know what I mean? Like,
I know.
How do you look at her and be like, that's not my wife. She's being, you know, possessed by this demon. And it's like, she's done nothing to you to make you feel that way other than fucking gyrating in her garden.
AKA dancing. Like,
yeah.
This is not, I don't know what year this happened in.
1993.
But okay. Elvis has been long gone. Like, I don't know if he'd been, yeah, what year did he die?
I don't know.
Anyway, I feel like at this point he's been long gone. He sure hadn't been dancing his blue suede shoes on the fucking stage anymore. Like, we've moved past this gyrating bullshit.
Right. And also, she could have been doing, like, The Hills Are Alive with the Sound of Music out in her garden. Because that's where she, like, really loved to stay.
And Anand did that.
Exactly. I really feel like, you know, when Cher in Clueless, they're having that argument or whatever, and, like, the debate. Mm-hmm. And she, like, finishes off with something like absolutely absurd, and she's like, yeah, and everyone's like, yeah, that's how it was when you just said, and a nun did that. I was like, fuck yeah. Wait. Okay. So after a few days of them really, you know, giving it to her.
But not water.
Yeah, but not water or food. Really putting her through all the steps that they believe an exorcism has. Because none of them know. None of them are ordained or, you know, anything. Even at least in other stories, it's someone that had been in the church that had done this. Or I don't know. It's just like these people really are just like, oh, we could do this.
I haven't read every chapter of the Bible, but I've read a decent amount of it. And I do not recall anything in the Bible that's like a how-to get rid of a demon in an exorcism.
Right.
I could be wrong.
Also, if I would have read the word exorcise, I would have been like, oh, don't want to do that. That sounds like lots of cardio. Well, anyway, they called in backup. And that was David Klingner, I think is how you say it. And he was another person that was from their church who was excommunicated, but now in their new little friendship religious circle. And he was just 28 years old. He wasn't a priest. You know, he wasn't trained in any capacity, but they believed he could really be the one to help rid Joan of these demons that resided in her, because they thought, okay, we've got rid of like one or two, but like we need to call in the big muscle, the one with the brains and the bronze. And that was David. He helped them tie her down even like further. And then he told them, all right, we've got to get more physical. Yes, y'all been like holding her down and doing this, but we really got to get these demons out of her. So by turning it up a notch, he instructed them to start slapping Joan across the face.
Again, how does that affect the demon?
No idea. And I don't know this to be true, but I feel like they were probably a little like, because they were doing extreme things, but it wasn't like a torture session.
Yeah.
You know, like, yes, they had bound her and refused water and all of that, but it's like they weren't like physically like beating her. But now it's like, okay, but he's the big guns. He's the one who is going to be all their saviors. You know, like, hell, they're probably fucking tired. They've been at this multiple days. And they say they truly believed that Joan had a had multiple demons, had 10 demons inside of her, and they had not been successful to expel all of them. So he starts slapping her across the face harder and harder. While he's doing this and while the others are doing this, he starts shouting prayers, demanding that the demons leave her body. Even though Joan is so tired, she still fought back. And not because she was a demon or possessed. It was because she was in pain.
And people are beating her and she's hungry.
Yeah, she's starving, dehydrated, and fucking terrified.
Oh, and did we mention probably in psychosis?
Right. Well, Ralph said that her eyes were very red one time. And apparently she was a very like manic person when she wasn't on her meds. And I was listening to the podcast, Our True Crime Podcast. And they said like, no, your eyes can really appear red when you're in that manic state. Like, obviously it's extreme measures, but it can happen. So he might have seen that, but also not how he's describing it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Now, even though they're doing all of this, it still isn't working. Joan still isn't Joan anymore. And I think they really were trying to like have her essentially die to be reborn so the demons would be out of her. So like when she's fighting back, they're like, just fucking die so the evil spirits leave your body and you come back and you're Joan again. So when they withheld food, it's because of that. Like I feel like they were trying to do that, but they're not saying, I want you to die. They're saying, I want you to be reborn.
To an extent, I do think that there are like predatory behaviors like this guy that came in. I mean, what do I know? But I mean, I can see where someone could come in and be like, yeah, I'm going to help you get rid of this demon. Okay, so you're already not feeding her. Cool. Now you have to slap her.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, I mean, I don't know. How do we know this guy didn't get off on this? This wasn't some like sexual deviant type, you know?
Yeah. He wasn't the last to arrive because this was a house party. And Matthew Nusky, I think is how you say his last name. He's 23 years old. And he was an assistant greenkeeper at a local golf course. So Colby would have loved him. But when he's not helping with a swing, he's, you know, praising the Lord in this extreme spiritual group.
Yeah, and then literally swinging his fucking fist at someone who's in literal psychosis and needs help, not dehydration.
Mm-hmm. And he thought he was special, and everyone else did.
Because they're all fucking narcissists, and they all think that they're special. Continue.
Well, his mom had said that...
Oh, his mommy told him he was special?
That he had special powers.
Okay, fuck all this off. I hate these people.
And he had a divine gift, and that's why, you know, he couldn't be bound to the church that they were in because everyone was jealous, and he was meant to, you know, like, spread the word, bigger, better things. And the others believed it, too. So when he showed up at their house, they're like, oh, well, thank God he didn't have to be a caddy or anything today. He can help us with this demon. And you know what he showed up with? Not golf clubs. I'm not going to give you that. You're never going to guess. If you said, I got to get something to either protect us or keep something out, what would you bring?
Chalk.
Cling wrap.
Oh, my God.
Like, cling wrap.
Yeah.
For leftovers. Wrap. Yes. So he had a bottle of olive oil, and he blessed it with his special powers because he could turn that into holy oil. And he anointed all of them with the oil. Then he took the roll of the cling wrap, and he started circling the house. And he did this 7 times because we know that 7's a holy number. And he wrapped the doors, the windows, and he sealed them shut to keep the demons in. And he also told the others that this was a spiritual barrier and no demon could cross the saran wrap. Not sponsored.
Oh, God.
But he also said that they didn't just have to like destroy Joan in the sense of keeping like abusing her physically. They also needed to destroy everything she loved and held dear. So that meant bringing her clothing, her photographs that she had, and they would trample on them, tear them up, you know, start to burn them. Then they went out to her flower bed and her garden and her greenhouse that like she loved her greenhouse. And they smashed everything. They tore up everything. They burned down things. Like, everything she had, they destroyed. And he said that her possessions were anchoring the spirits to her soul.
You literally can't convince me that this guy isn't a fucking sociopath cosplaying as, like, an anointed person with spiritual gift.
Right. Right. They took hammers and busted down the greenhouse. You know, they lit her flowers on fire. They just destroyed everything, which breaks my heart because I feel like what they held near and dear, like when they went off to their little spiritual journey and stuff, like that's what the greenhouse was for her. After all she's been through in her life, she had a special place that was her sanctuary. And they destroyed it. Now, Joan's still tied to the chair. Still no food, no water. Like I said, this has been 4 days. And she's growing weaker. She can't fight back anymore. You know, and she would slip in and out of consciousness. So now with her in her weakened state, they really thought, okay, we are going to put all of our hands on her. We are going to force these demons out. Like, we are about to win this battle. And so they started to press on Joan's like lower stomach. And I feel like, you know, when you need to get the last of the toothpaste out, and so you start at the bottom and you like squeeze it all the way down. That's what they're doing. They're pushing as hard as they can on her stomach and moving up like on her belly to her chest and like forcing the demons up through her body to come out of her mouth. And the more they moved up, you know, like it was like they were doing the wrong lymphatic drainage. And what's really sad is with this pressure at this stage in Joan's dehydration and all of that, it caused her to start having a heart attack. And so then they were like, we're winning. You know, this is exactly what we need to do. So they kept doing it. And at some point during this whole chaos, Joan's body gave out. She stopped fighting. Her eyes closed. You know, her breathing stopped entirely. And once the demons had been removed from Joan's body via them squeezing her like a tube of toothpaste and it coming out of her mouth, that last little like breath that she took, they said that she let out a hiss and then the lights went out.
Oh, I'm sure.
But still, no one called for help. They continued to pray over her. They believed that she was unconscious, as they want to say, but they really thought she was going to resurrect. And with resurrection, you do have to die, right?
Okay, and then they did no life-saving measures to bring her back?
Right. And they waited. They continued to pray and wait because she was going to come out of this and she would no longer be possessed. She would be free of the demons. She would be Joan again. And her and Ralph could live happily ever after. And Ralph really believed she was going to rise again, but she didn't. It was like 12 to 14 hours later, Ralph finally called for an ambulance. But by then, Joan had been dead for half a day. Paramedics came in and found her body cold, bruised beyond belief, her limbs showing signs of being restrained for a long-ass time, days. Her lips were cracked from dehydration. The coroner said that she did die of cardiac arrest triggered by the intense physical and emotional stress of this so-called exorcism.
Please tell me they all went to prison.
So this was sensational, and it made international headlines because these people tortured her for 4 days over, like, seemingly nothing, you know? They couldn't even say anything other than she was dancing and she started making animal sounds, you know? Like, and she said a cuss word.
Okay, so we also know that she has fucking schizophrenia. Like, right. Okay, God love her that that's the least of her symptoms.
And that's the thing. They didn't talk about that. You know what I mean? They didn't talk about that until a point, and then they did. But Ralph Vollmer, John and Leanne Reichenbach, Leah Glugston, David Klingner, and...
Is that the one that bought the cling wrap?
No. That would be funny if his name was Klingner. But no, he's the one who came in, and they thought he was going to be the one, but Matthew came in, and he was the one with the cling wrap. They were all arrested.
Good.
Now, the charges centered around manslaughter because Joan hadn't consented to being exorcised. And because they didn't call for help, they're saying that it was manslaughter. Now, this went to trial, and the defense leaned hard on their religious views. They said that Joan had wanted the exorcism.
Hold on. So if Joan had wanted the exorcism, they would have gotten away with this?
Oh, just wait.
Okay.
But yeah, they said that Joan had wanted the exorcism and that she believed that she was possessed. And they tried to help her not hurt her. Joan, you know, when you look at it, even if she said, I do want your help, you don't know what that means unless she said whatever. But also, come on. She had been tied down for days, starved, beaten, her whole world, her possessions destroyed. Photographs from her family, from her husband, her first husband, who died by suicide. You know, like things she could never get back if she survived this, those wouldn't. And it was hard. Like the jury really didn't know, but ultimately they said they were guilty, but they got suspended sentences.
You better be fucking lying. That's so fucking stupid.
No. So they were found guilty, but they didn't serve time. The court acknowledged that they didn't intend to kill her.
Yes, they did. Yes, right. They fucking did. Because, yes, they did. Let me just keep saying that because I can't form a thought because I'm so aggravated. Yes, they did because they said that she literally had to die in order to come back as not a demon. So,
right.
Yeah, she did have to die. And then they just patiently waited, twiddling their fucking thumbs, waiting for her to come back to life. And they did no life-saving measures.
Right.
Yes, they did intend for her to die.
Exactly. Well, and like by not giving her food or water, you're trying to kill her. You're starving her.
This fucking story.
The public was outraged like you are. And they were like, what happened to Joan? Like no one protected Joan in her whole fucking life. No one protected her. But it didn't matter. No one served any time. And Ralph went on to marry someone else.
Of course he did.
Now, when this was coming out and they were in, because before it went to trial, he wasn't really talking about her mental health. But then after, he said he thinks it's actually the mental institutions that she was at, their fault, because they let her go too soon and they really didn't treat her like well. And they gave her this medicine and then like, you know, told her to come off of it or whatever. Like it was all their fault. And I'm like, okay, well, convenient that you're blaming someone who you didn't even talk about. And you said that she was possessed. So it can't be the institution's fault and also that she was possessed.
Right.
Like, can't happen. Now, the house is still there, but it's been empty ever since this happened. People have bought it, but no one ever stays in it. Like, the verandas have been stripped off, the windows are boarded up, and it's honestly a place where teenagers kind of go to, like, dare people, like, go inside, see if you can stay, that kind of thing. Holding seances, trying to connect with Joan. But, again, no one's moved in. And when they have bought it to be like, it's fine, we're going to move in, we're going to fix it up, they just say, we can't stay here because it just doesn't feel right. But ultimately, it probably doesn't feel right because Joan Vollmer died in that house. Not because of demons. And it was by the hands of her husband, someone that she loved.
The people that she loved and trusted the most.
Yeah. And that's probably the scariest part is that she trusted them the most and they're the ones who killed her and then got away with it. Like, yes, they were found guilty of manslaughter, but, you know, didn't spend any time. And they're living their life either in secret, like, you know, where their names are changed or whatever. Ralph got remarried. Like, they're living their life. And it's like they got to live out this fantasy of being these evangelical healers. But they didn't heal anyone. They killed someone. They killed Joan. And again, this is in 1993.
This story is fucked up. Did you steal this story from my catalog?
I feel like I did. You know, I do like to dip my toe in your pond sometimes. I like it wet.
You're nasty.
I am. When they said her lips were so cracked from the dehydration, I can only imagine, because when mine get just freaking like chapped a little bit, I'm like, like I can't think of anything else. And I'm like, do you have chapstick? Do you have anything that I can just put on my lips because the burning is so bad? What I can imagine it being like is when my heels are really crusty and dusty and like, you know, when you have to kind of glue the skin back together because it's cracked real bad. That's what her lips were like.
You know, you make some weird-ass comparisons.
I know. I know. I know.
All right. So my story is about Lorenzen Wright. And let me just tell you, the whole time I was working on this, I kept saying, like, Lorenzo, no, that's not it. So if I screw up, I'm so sorry. It's Lorenzen. But I just know my Carrie brain is going to carry all over this, and I know I'm wrong. But okay. Lorenzen was born November 4th, 1975 in Oxford, Mississippi.
Oh, okay.
So he was a really good basketball player, and he came from a basketball player as well. His dad, Herb Wright, was like a professional basketball player overseas. Well, Lorenzen just followed right in his father's footsteps and was like this really great basketball player. So he went to school in Mississippi, but because he was such a standout, his family actually moved him to Memphis so that he could go to school and play with like better athletes, more of a chance to be seen.
Right. You know, it's weird because like you would think, okay, they want him to be the best, so stay there and he would like shine. But you really do have to go where there's buzz being made.
Well, and if you're the biggest fish playing in a small pond, you're not getting faster, stronger, better.
Yeah.
Because you don't have the competition.
Me, never played a game in my life.
Now, his dad was in a wheelchair because he was a police officer and was like wounded in the line of duty. This was after his dad was basically like professional in another country. And then had like tried out for the NBA a few times. Like everything's like a former NBA prospect. And he was in the military. Like his dad was the freaking jack of all trades. Seemed to be a good part of his life and like really taught him the game of basketball and all the things. So when he was in high school, Lorenzen was 6'11".
Holy fuck.
Yes. And so people were like looking at him because he was going to make it big.
Looking up at him.
Well, and then in the summer, he would play in this amateur league for like really great players. And eventually he got noticed.
Okay, this is a random thing, but apparently I have sports on the brain because of all the things he did. But are swimmers usually really tall? Because I was just thinking, when you said in the summer, and I was like, he could probably win at swimming because he's so tall. Like, they have to touch first. So, you know, he has long arms and legs.
Okay.
Like, I could be the fastest swimmer, but, like, it ain't gonna work. Like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Anyway.
So, Lorenzen was drafted in the NBA in 1996. He was drafted 7th overall by the LA Clippers.
Oh, shit.
And then ultimately, he spent 13 seasons in the NBA.
Oh, my God.
But he had I think she was a high school sweetheart, Shara. Now, Shara was like a pastor's daughter, and they fell in love before he was in the NBA. And they had a son, and he was like doing the back and forth, trying to, you know, make life work as a traveling ball player. But the two got married in 1998. And then in 99, Shara gave birth to their second child. And then in 2001, that's when like life hit it big for them because he got transferred to the Memphis Grizzlies. So he was able to be home all the time instead of traveling for all of the games and like having to live away from his family while they stayed in Memphis. So they ended up moving to Collierville, which is a suburb outside of Memphis that's a pretty wealthy suburb. Like NFL players live there, all the things, lots of money. And things seemed really great for the couple. They ended up having 7 kids, 3 girls, 4 boys. And they seemed like they were living a really great life. They had the money, you know, living the dream.
They had a whole freaking basketball team.
But like for real though. But unfortunately, their youngest daughter, Sierra Simone, when she was 11 months old, passed away from SIDS.
Oh, shit.
That I cannot. Ugh. Like when I heard which losing a kid, like obviously I can't even process that because I don't, you know, I know I don't have kids. I can't even imagine. But 11 months old seemed like older. I don't know what the age range is for SIDS, but I was like, I can't imagine having 11 months with a child then be taken from you in an instant like that.
Yeah.
And of course, as you can imagine, the two of them were absolutely devastated. And it really like marked this change in their marriage. Because again, can't even imagine. Like, you know that there's the blame game because it's just human nature to want to find answers. And why did this happen to us? And you should have done this and I should have done that. And so, of course, like, I just cannot even, I don't understand how parents stay together after the death of like a young child like that.
No, because we all cope differently.
And I mean, we know that the divorce rates are so high for couples that have lost kids.
Yeah. Because just think about how different we coped with like losing our parents and stuff. And we're not in a relationship because, you know what I mean? Because I think it's human nature to be like, no, I'm doing it the right way. No, like my pain is worse because I'm the mom. No, right. My pain is worse because I didn't have as much time with her or.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I don't know. I don't know how y'all do it when y'all stay together. I don't know how you do it when you don't, because you're also married to the person that you turn to and stuff. And then they can't be that person anymore. Yeah, that's a whole lot of just
trauma.
Yeah.
Trauma. They really tried to make it work. They renewed their vows. They did the whole thing. But in 2006, Lorenzen was traded, back to the Atlanta Hawks. And this just added more stress and more drama to their marriage. And then eventually, Lorenzen's NBA career ended. And so Shira moved back to Memphis and he stayed in Atlanta. And by 2010, they called it quits, divorced, and they seemed to really make like this kind of 50-50 relationship work. Now, but here was a big problem. So money, because money's always a problem. He had made like $55 million while he was in the NBA.
Woo!
But they spent most of it.
Ooh.
And I'm just like, I can't process spending $55 million. Which, I mean, you could buy one house and spend that amount of money.
Yeah.
But I just can't even understand that. And then to think about, they have 7 kids that they're buying cell phones for and clothes for and cars for and school for, because you know they're probably going to private schools, and then they got college, and then they got weddings, and I just cannot, like...
Yeah.
But they lived the life. They lived in a really nice subdivision. They lived, you know, had the cars, had the clothes, had everything, and the money was essentially gone.
That makes my stomach hurt thinking about that, just because I've never had that much money. But when you think of it in terms of like it relating to me, with the money I make, I spend the same that they spent, like ratio, you know what I mean? Because there's no money.
Right.
It's literally, oh, the next paycheck? Yes. that's really it.
It wasn't uncommon for Lorenzen to come back and forth between Memphis and Atlanta so that he could see and be with his kids. And on July 18th of 2010, Lorenzen was in Tennessee to see family and to see Shira. But when he didn't show up for some family events, people were like, hold on, this isn't like him. Where is he? So the family reaches out to Shira because they're like, where is he? And she's like, you know, this is him. He'll be back. It's no big deal. But now we're like 4 days after the last time he had been seen. And so everybody's like, really, what's going on? And then she says, get this. She says that 2 Hispanic men came to her house with guns to look for Lorenzen.
Now, was this before or after you said, oh, you know him, he'll be back?
Exactly.
Like, again, it can't be both. How Ralph said she was possessed, and then also the doctors didn't do enough and for her mental illness. This is the same thing. Like, oh, it's just Lorenzen. And then also, well, there were two sketchy people that came around with guns. Like, you, what?
Right. And people were like, well, because she made it seem like it was like a drug deal type thing. And she, everybody was like, no. Drugs? No, that ain't him. He would not do that. This is definitely not drugs. So the police get involved and they're trying to figure out what's going on. They know that, like, because the family tells them that he had hung out with one of his college friends because he went to the University of Memphis for a little while before he got drafted. And so they're like, hey, let's meet with him. Like, let's see what he has to say.
Why did I think he went to Ole Miss?
Because he was from
Oxford. Okay, sorry.
And so the friend's like, yeah, we went to the gym. And look, the whole time we were there, Shira was like blowing him up, sending him sexy, sexy stuff, saying she wanted to see him, all the things. So the friend says, yeah, I took him over to Shira's house.
Well, she didn't Shira that information.
Right. So they ask Shira and she's like, yeah, he brought him over here with their son that night. And that's when she's like, yeah, he was making some comments about having this box of drugs. And then she's when she tells the thing about two Hispanic men coming in with like overcoats in July in Memphis. Okay.
Whatever.
Like straight in the devil's asshole. You think they're wearing overcoats? Like, it is too fucking hot in July in the South, in anywhere right now, because everywhere's boiling over. Ain't no fucking way.
Well, and also, what is she doing? Like a classic, like sketchy person on the side of the corner, like they have a trench coat on and like,
and then they're going to flash you with their watches.
Yes. Like, what?
So the police do what police do and they subpoena his phone records just to see like who he'd been talking to, what had been going on. And they find out that the last call that Lorenzen had made was to 911.
What?
Yeah. So it was not the Collierville police. It went to the Germantown police. And basically where he called from was kind of like this like triangular area where any of these couple of little police departments could have picked it up. So on the phone call, the 911 operator is like, hey, yo, what's your emergency? And all you hear is like 8 gunshots in the background.
Holy fuck.
Like, it's bad. Like, someone is getting murdered. Like, you can hear like the pow, pow, pow. And then like 5 more.
Oh, my God.
So the fucking Germantown police are like, boop, boop, boop. Where's this coming from? Oh, that's in Collierville, not here. Oh, thank God. We don't have to do anything about that.
Nuh-uh.
And they didn't do a fucking thing.
Are you kidding me?
Nope.
Like, that doesn't even freaking make sense. I thought, like, they would have to do something. Like, yeah. That's negligent to hear yes. that. The other morning, my shoulder was really hurting really badly, and it was my left shoulder and, like, all down my arm. And I was like, what arm is it that hurts when you're having a heart attack? And I was doing, like, I don't know what I was doing, but I needed to be hands-free. And so I said, hey, Siri, what arm hurts when you're having a heart attack? And it said, calling emergency services. And, like, was like, 3, 2. And I was like, no. I was just curious. Like, I know I'm not having a heart attack. I was just like, what arm is it? So I could be like, whew, I feel like I'm having one. But it did that. So I was like, oh, my God, I'm so glad I got it before. Like, I dropped everything to hit, like, stop calling.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, my God, then they'd have to call back. And then I'd have to be like, oh, sorry, you know. But thinking about these people who heard fucking gunshots.
And did nothing.
Did nothing.
So the police, the Collierville police, actually do their due diligence. And meanwhile, this has been a week now since the 911 call, since the day he went missing.
Oh, my God.
So the police do their due diligence. They go to that location where the phone pinged from and they're searching. They've got like the dogs. They've got forensic teams. They are looking all around.
So you mean to tell me who let the dogs out?
No. So they go like they have to go over this barbed wire fence through this hill, and that's when they find a body. Spoiler alert, it is Lorenzen. But just think about how this had been 9 days.
Oh my God.
In Memphis in July.
Oh my gosh.
They said that the body was like unrecognizable, except for his bright white tennis shoes.
Oh, but something they would never say about yours.
You know what? But there was other things like jewelry and some clothing. So they're like, okay.
And his height.
Well, but no, but it's like.
But I'm just saying.
Yeah. But you're not going on the lane I'm going down. I'm going down. It wasn't a robbery.
Oh. They stole his height from me.
Like, hold your horses. Listen.
Payback's a bitch, eh?
They also found some shell casings around. But here's the thing. It was from a 9mm and a 25 caliber pistol. So these are not interchangeable, like,
bullets.
Yeah, that word. Pew, pew. That's all I could think about. So that shows that there were two people there.
Or one person.
There were two people there.
Ambidextrous.
Okay, well, that's not how you say that, but there were.
Ambidextrous.
Ambidextrous.
Oh, there's not the yes?
No.
Oh,
okay. Ambidextrous. Ambidextrous. Anyway.
I said that wrong my whole life.
Well, yes, you did, Rottweiler. So the autopsy comes in, and he was shot 5 times. So after his body was found and it was confirmed that it was Lorenzen, they go back to Shira and they're like, girl, tell us this story again. And that's when she was like, nope, not telling nothing. I want an attorney.
And let's just insert here that that doesn't mean that she's guilty. I mean, she's probably guilty because she's been lying and stuff, but you can always have an attorney. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. Absolutely. Get an attorney. I would. And when they talk to the family's like, Shira, that's her. She's the one, she probably just wants his money, and she's been having money problems, and like I said, ain't no way he was doing anything with drugs. So the police start looking through his text messages, and they see that, well, like I told you earlier, she was sending him very explicit messages, basically like getting him to come to Memphis and being like, let's get back together, let's hook up, let's do all the things, and that essentially, she's the reason why he came.
And he came?
We don't know. But we do know that they get a search warrant for her phone, and they see that she was texting a guy named Billy Turner and Jimmy Martin. The text, like, said things, but they didn't actually say things. They're like, this shit's in code. Clearly. So Jimmy is her cousin. But here's the thing. He was out on bail at the time of Lorenzen's murder. Jimmy was out on bail for a second-degree murder charge.
Oh, shit.
Like, why the fuck is he out? But then also, I'm like, I go so back and forth about if someone should be able to be out on bail while they're awaiting a murder charge, because it's
not
like
a murder charge!
Well, but they also, like, it's really hard to do your defense in jail while you're waiting, but also, like,
be under house arrest or something. Like, you cannot leave your house.
Yeah, I do agree with that.
Like, you think they killed someone and you're just going to let them be willy-nilly free? No.
So Billy Turner, he was her landscaper, but he was also a deacon at her church, and they had met, and well, they ended up winding up having like crushes on each other, and we're pretty sure having an affair. So investigators, of course, reach out to Tweedledee and Tweedledum, and they're like, y'all know anything about this? And they're like, nope. So the police are at a standstill. Essentially, the case goes cold for a couple of years. And while this is happening, Shira gets the damn life insurance policy and is just fucking spending.
How wild is it that we have SelectQuote as a sponsor and we just talked about how people will kill for the life insurance?
Mm-hmm. Now, the family was trying to sue her to, like, stop her from using all of the money. I mean, come on, put some of this away from your fucking kids. Like, that's what it was there for.
What happens if you do, like, spend all the money, but, like, you're the one who killed him? You don't get it back because the money's spent.
I mean, I guess they could, like if there was money left, the insurance company could probably sue her for it, maybe, question mark. Don't know. But like there wasn't any money left. So 2 years after his murder, old Jimmy, the cousin, well, he gets convicted of that second degree murder charge. So he's going to prison. And that's when he like, I got some information for y'all. Because he ain't got nothing to lose. That's a bargaining chip for him. He's already going to prison. He can use it for God knows what. I'm sure not a lesser sentence, but I'm sure for a better prison or whatever. More, I don't know, a conjugal visit. I don't fucking know. Whatever he could do, he's going to use that to be able to get what he wants. So the police talk to him and he's like, okay, Shira and Billy.
Sitting in a tree, K-I-S-S-I-N-G.
Right. They were talking about how to kill Lorenzen. And that he was, like, going to help them. But then they didn't call him to do it. But what they did do is call him after they did it. Because they were like, do we need your help? Because after we killed him, Shira, she kind of panicked and, like, dropped her gun and ran away because she got so scared. And he said that they had told him to go up there and find the gun. So he went back where the body was found with a metal detector and boop, 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 found the gun. And so then he went with Billy to get rid of it. And he says, we threw it in this lake. So they can't just take him at his, you know, at face value. They got to prove this. So they sent some divers into the lake and they didn't find anything. But here's the thing. It was really, like, it had just rained. It was really muddy. And they couldn't really see much. There really wasn't much more they could do right then. And again, the case kind of goes cold because what else can they do? They couldn't find the gun where it was said to have been thrown. So they're pretty stuck. 7 years after Lorenzen's murder, I mean, his mom had been pushing and pushing and pushing. And the Memphis Police Department reopens it and they get everybody involved. I'm talking the police department, sheriff's department, ATF, FBI, everybody's involved. And the FBI's like, hold my beer, let me take my dive team down to look in this lake. And within like an hour, they had found the gun.
Okay, so I feel like the Memphis police was me trying to get the rings at the bottom of the thing, and then you're like, hold on, you dove in and like in one fell swoop, like you have them all on your arm and you come up.
So they test the gun. It takes a little while, like a month or something, and they test the gun and it comes back as a match to the 9mm shell casings that were left at the crime scene. And so they're like, boom, Jimmy telling us the truth. So then they get search warrants to put a tap on Billy and Shira's phone.
Are they still fucking with each other?
Well, what they do is they release to the media that they had the gun and it was a match. So, beep, boop, 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 boop. Shira calls Billy and is like, someone's saying something. But they were kind of talking in code again, but like, I mean, they're saying it without saying it. So it wasn't quite enough. But they also were able, with the search warrant, to watch her search history. And this girl was like looking up like how long do fingerprints last underwater, et cetera, et cetera. And she flies back to Memphis so damn fast after this gun is found. And she's using damn burner phones to talk to Billy. And they're setting up secret meetings and the police are watching them and doing this whole thing. And they're looking over their shoulders, making sure nobody's watching them, having this clandestine meeting. Oh, because, by the way, you're like flying in from where? She had moved to California at this point. The police finally get a search warrant for Billy's house and they find guns. Well, he's a felon. He ain't supposed to have guns, so they can arrest him for that. And so then they're like, you want to talk? And he's like, I mean, I'll tell you I had sex with her, but that's all I'm going to tell you. So then Shira goes back to California. They arrest her there. Now, the prosecutors know that they really have basically the word of a jail informant. And I mean, while he was right about where the gun was, I mean, they have their work cut out for them to be able to prove how the other two were involved. Because I mean, he could have just done it and dumped the gun and blamed them.
So you're saying it's possible that he could have only been one person but holding two different guns?
all in all, she had gotten about like a $2 million life insurance because he had an NBA pension and his life insurance policy. Which, sidebar, like, there really should be more in place to protect these young athletes from blowing their whole, like, money.
Mm-hmm. I thought you were going to say wad.
Yes, yeah. That too. Their wad of cash. But like, there really should be more to teach them how to take care of themselves and make sure, like, I just wondered the percentage of, like, professional athletes that have no money left.
A lot.
A lot. But, like, I think the NFL maybe has, like, a, like, finance 101 for new people in the NFL. But, man, I hate that for them. But this is what police think happened. Because where Lorenzen's body was found was basically the spot that when he and Shira had, like, an argument and they needed to get away from everything, that's where they would go talk. So they felt like probably what happened was she's, like, sexy, talked to him, and then, like, hey, let's go right out to her spot. And then when they get there, Billy's waiting for them, and he has a gun, she has a gun, and they start shooting at him, and Lorenzen runs. That's why he's, like, over that barbed wire fence, because he jumped the fence, and they're chasing him, and Billy is the one that, like, ran after him, and that's when Lorenzen called 911. And remember, this happened at, like, really late at night. So Billy was able to follow the light from his phone while he called 911.
Oh, my gosh.
And then,
like, in his final moments, and what, like, helped Billy find him and did nothing for him, because those people were like, well, not in our jurisdiction.
Well, and it did, because it led them to the police to his body.
Though. Very true. Very true. But I'm just saying, like, fuck.
So Lorenzen had, like, kind of hid behind this bush, like, thinking that it would block him, and it didn't. So prosecution waiting for, like, preparing for this trial when they get a call from her attorneys, and she ends up pleading guilty to facilitation of first-degree murder.
Oh, fuck that.
She gets 30 years in prison.
Okay.
But she's eligible for parole in 2027.
Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm.
Now, old Billy, he decided to chance it. And he goes to trial. And he gets found guilty of first-degree murder. And that's an automatic life sentence in Tennessee. Now, this was on an episode of Snapped. And on Snapped, they just talked about, like, how much Lorenzen meant to Memphis, because he not only was, like, this really well-known player, but he also did so much for the community in the form of, like, philanthropy and just, like, scholarships and all these different things that he just, like, really did for the area. And, like, he's truly missed. And this is truly a heartbreak in Memphis.
Oh.
But it's, like, it's so fucked up that
for no reason other than she wanted money.
It's kind of similar to your story in that the people that they were supposed to be able to love and trust the most are the ones that hurt them.
Yeah. Well, at least they are having to serve time. But very weird that both of us did, like, 1990s
yeah.
and stuff. Because we have been doing, like, 1846. Well, thank y'all so much for listening to this episode, listening to us bicker and all the things. And if you want to see it live, we are going to New Orleans. And if you're like, hey, I'm listening to this, only have 4 days to get there, can't do it, don't worry, because later on this year, we have the True Crime Cruise that we're going on.
So if you want to get in on that, that's in November. And it's going to Royal Caribbean's private island and somewhere else, the Bahamas, ? But if you want in on that, go to crimewaveatsea.com/creep. And then that's where you put all in your information and they send you, well, all the information. So check that out. If you can't meet up with us at one of these events or you can't do Patreon, that's okay. We understand. But there are so many ways that you can support us. You can like engage in social media. You can share episodes. You can like, subscribe, review, all the things. And remember,
creep it real
and don't get scared.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.